Hi, this is Colleen Power Kupka in Scottsdale, Arizona, and welcome to Rejuvenate Your Hormones and Wellness. How are you today? You know, it's so beautiful here. Our weather is finally turning around in the desert, and if you live here, you know, and this is the time of year that we all get to start getting out the doors and doing more things, right? It was a little bit hard. We had some really hot days. But I can also say that if you live in an area that you truly can enjoy autumn, the leaves changing and everything like that, I miss that. I grew up in Minneapolis, and this was my favorite time of year there, after the summer, of course. But I knew after those leaves were down, it was going to start raining eventually, and we would have snow. So that's why I got here to the desert. The nice thing, though, is I can go enjoy and come back, right? So what are we going to be talking about today? I really want to talk about a subject that is really on my heart. And the subject today is going to be about dementia and Alzheimer's. And do you have it in your family? Well, I certainly do. And there's a lot of it. So it starts out with when I was young, a child, really. My great aunt had it. My grandmother did. And then eventually my aunt got it a few years back and passed away from it. And thankfully, my mom never did get it. And we would have conversations, though. She was very fearful of it. And of course, I am too, right? But I just remember having conversations with her. She was young. Like, don't worry, Mom. They're going to come up with a cure. Someday, they will. And so far, we don't. However, I think we've learned a lot about it. And I think that there are some things on the horizon that can hopefully help with all of this. And so what I want to talk today about is some of those things that we might be able to do that doesn't turn on, that gene doesn't turn on. You know, as I look back to, you know, Alzheimer's, when I was 16, my first job was in a nursing home. And I started in the kitchen or in the dietary area and would enjoy people coming down to the dining room and talking with them and having fun with them. And then they would leave and we'd get into those food fights that nobody ever knew about and cleaned them up and that kind of thing. And then the second job that I had within that same home was I became a CNA and I worked on a locked Alzheimer's unit. And let me tell you, as a kid of 16 or 17, whatever I was, it was eye-opening. And to see the progression of the disease, it was difficult sometimes. You know, people would become confused, became maybe where they didn't know they recognized their family members, you know, starting to, some of them, drift away and come just on the holidays and that kind of thing. I loved working there. And like I said, I think for being a kid, it was a good experience. And I won't forget those times. So what is the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's? You hear those terms all the time, right? So dementia is a general term for a decline in mental ability, severe enough to interfere with our daily life. And Alzheimer's is actually a specific disease, but it is the most common cause of dementia. Currently, more than 55 million people have dementia worldwide. That's what we're all thinking, or that's what they're thinking. And dementia is currently the seventh leading cause of death, and one of the major causes of disability and dependency among older people. And get this one, in 2019, dementia cost economies globally $1.3 trillion. And approximately 50% of those costs were attributed to care provided by caregivers. And yes, women experience higher disability, adjusted life years, and mortality due to dementia. And everybody in my family that has gotten it has been a woman, right? And dementia results from a variety of diseases and injuries that affect the brain. For Alzheimer's, every year there are nearly 10 million new cases. Get that one. Per the Institute of Aging, they state that estimates vary, but experts suggest that more than 6 million Americans, most of them 65 or older, may have Alzheimer's. This is staggering. Listen to this. By the year 2050, the number of people aged 65 and older with Alzheimer's may grow a projected 12.7 million. Kind of crazy, huh? Older Black Americans are twice as likely to get Alzheimer's or other dementias as older whites are. And then older Hispanics are about 1.5 times as likely to have Alzheimer's or other dementias as older whites. Patients with diabetes have an accelerated rate of cognitive decline and a 1.6-fold increased risk of developing dementia, including Alzheimer's disease, vascular dementia, compared to people without diabetes. So just a little overview of dementia. Dementia describes a group of symptoms that are associated with a decline in memory, reasoning, or thinking skills. It can be caused by a number of diseases, which destroys nerve cells and damages the brain, most often leading to deterioration in cognitive function, the ability to process thought. It also affects a person's ability to communicate, which can affect thinking, behavior, and feelings. And dementia may also develop after a stroke or in the context of certain infections, such as HIV, or as a result of harmful alcohol use, repetitive physical injuries. So we think about our football players out there, right? Or our boxers. Yes, they have helmets, but I'm hoping it helps. And then also nutritional deficiencies. There's other forms of dementia, which include vascular dementia, dementia with Lewy bodies, which those are abnormal deposits of proteins inside the nerve cells, and then a group of diseases that contribute to frontotemporal dementia, which actually that hits the frontal lobe of the brain. So what are some of the risks? Now, some of the risks include this: age, anybody 65 or older, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, being overweight or obese. And that is painting the picture to me of metabolic syndrome, right? And you see this, I mean, look around. There are a lot of people that fit this description: smoking, drinking too much alcohol, being physically inactive, being socially isolated. Think of the days of COVID and when people are in isolation. Do you think that the dementia rates probably increased? My guess that they did. So what are some early signs and symptoms of dementia? Well, forgetting things or recent events, losing or misplacing things, getting lost when walking or driving. Kind of sounds like me sometimes. I'm directionally challenged. Being confused even in familiar places, losing track of time, difficulty solving problems or making decisions, difficulties performing familiar tasks, and misjudging distances to objects visually. You know, some of this reminds me, like, years ago, not that many, maybe a few, and I was about 10 to 12 miles from here and on a busy road, and on the side of that road was like a trail type of thing, and it had gravel and rocks and whatnot, and people would walk on that, you know, to avoid the road. Anyway, there was a woman walking, and she was very, you know, dressed nicely. She's about 70 years old, and she's kind of kicking the pebbles as she's walking. And I had a moment of, is she okay? But I thought, well, you know, she's dressed nice, she looks good, and continued on my way. And the weird thing is I was talking to a neighbor the next day, and they had a relative who had a family member who had Alzheimer's who left the home, and it sounded like her. So it's the area that they found her. It made me think, like, you know what? If I kind of get one of those feelings in my gut, I'm just going to stop and check it out and make sure that that person is okay. You know, also common changes in mood occur, like feeling anxious or sad or angry about memory loss. People know that there's something going on. Personality changes, inappropriate behavior, withdrawn from work or social activities, being less interested in other people's emotion. Some of these symptoms can worsen over time, or they go away for a while, only to occur later in the stages of dementia. As the disease, you know, progresses, people are going to need help, as we can guess, right? I want to tell you about a study that I read. Actually, it was recently released, and it was out of the medical journal JAMA. And they found that the risk of dementia begins to rapidly increase after 10 hours spent sedentary each day, regardless of how the sedentary time is accumulated. It was also found that the lower levels of sedentary behavior, up to around 10 hours, were not associated with increased risk. So if you have a desk job, don't worry about it. You're okay. That's not what they're talking about. But what they are talking about, like, for example, my dad right now lives with us. He's 88 years old. The TV goes on the minute his eyes are open, and it doesn't shut off until he goes to bed. And that could be about 8 o'clock at night. He does this daily. He's on top of it with it within his mind. However, we really, as a family right now, are working on, like, what do we need to do so this stops? Because I don't want him getting dementia and that kind of thing, right? Now, there was an interesting study that came out this week, and it's called Getting Enough Sleep Can Clean Your Brain and Decrease Your Alzheimer's Risk. So this paper was presented at the American Neurological Association with one of their meetings, and they stated there that sleep has a potential to decrease the risk of certain neurological disorders. So neurological disorders including Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, autism, frontotemporal dementia, REM sleep disorder, epilepsy, and traumatic brain injury. What they stated is that sleep protects the brain by improving immunity and reducing stress, both of which lowers inflammation. There's a system which I never knew about in the brain. It's called the glymphatic system. It is only effective during sleep, and it cleans the brain of waste material. It's a very powerful cleaning process, and your brain is able to do very little else during this time. And if this process is disrupted, it can't do its job. And so think of it this way: patients that go into the hospital and they're awakened every few hours for blood pressures, this, that, or the other thing. Well, they can become delirious. And there's a term for it called sundowners. And it can happen to anybody over the age of 65. Now, if this continues to happen, it is something that it can increase the risk for, dementia or Alzheimer's. And I'll tell you what, we had an experience this last spring with my father, and he was admitted to the hospital overnight. And sure enough, he was being woke up every few minutes, probably for lab work and all this kind of stuff. And he became delirious. He didn't know where he was. He became a little agitated, and it was not a great thing to occur there. Brought him home, and it took about a couple days for him just to get back on track. So this glymphatic system, it operates during deep levels for sleep only, and that's where it can get rid of the harmful tau proteins and amyloid beta proteins, and then that kind of thing. So if you don't get into that deep level four, you could be in trouble. So if you're one of these people that have sleep apnea, and you're not doing anything about it, you really need to, because you're not sleeping well. I don't know if you've ever seen anybody with sleep apnea, but it's a very disruptive. It's breathing, stopping, waking up every few minutes. You don't even know it yourself, and it's not a good thing. Or if by chance you're someone that does have difficulty in sleeping and you're a woman, think about progesterone. It's great. Or think about melatonin. It's a great antioxidant. I know some people have difficulties with it. Start out with baby doses and gently increase, and you might have some luck with it. Furthermore, they're saying that you really need about 7 hours worth of sleep. If you get too much, it could be also not a good thing. But really, yeah, that's where it should be, is somewhere around that point. 7 hours, not a whole lot more, a little bit. Anyway, another thing that I found interesting is vitamin D. Found a few articles out there, and this one, vitamin D and the risk of dementia and Alzheimer's disease. I have to say this, almost every single person that walks into my office has low vitamin D. And I don't care, we live in the desert, and these are guys that work outside. And it's just unbelievable. I always thought it was, low sun. Well, that's not it around here. But in these studies, what they're finding is that people that have low D also, it seems to be a higher risk with dementia. And so the conclusion is to make sure that you're getting good enough vitamin D. And usually the recommended amounts that I'm seeing out there aren't bringing those levels up. I mean, most of the people that I'm working with, they probably are taking 5,000 to 10,000 IUs daily. And I can tell you too, is what I find sad, quite honestly, is insurance companies are now not wanting to cover vitamin D levels. And it's one reason why I don't work with them. But, you know, the last time around, they asked me to provide evidence that it was safe. And I was like, are you kidding? Pull open the internet and start looking at, you know, cancer and all these other different areas that vitamin D seems to help with. Now, there's another supplement that I have really fallen in love with this year because it does, it seems like to do a lot. One of our family members has cancer. So, you know, I'm always digging around, like, is there something else that can help? And berberine. So there's some thoughts to berberine. First of all, it works great on helping to stabilize sugars, blood sugars, take off visceral fat, lower cholesterol levels, you know, and it's also thought that it could help improve the cerebral blood flow in the head, limiting inflammation and growth of the tau and the amyloid proteins up there, and to help clear them out. So evidence is showing that it's effective with diabetes, atherosclerosis, cardiomyopathy, hypertension, helping with the gut. So almost every person that walks through my office right now is on berberine. It's two big yellow capsules a couple times a day. You want to get a good big glass of water because they're kind of big and that kind of thing to take. But honestly, I think they're probably worth it. So just take your time with them. Another thing that they're finding is that green tea has EGCG in it. And there's a great possibility they're thinking that it could probably help break apart some of those tangles with the protein tau, which is, again, a hallmark of Alzheimer's disease. And then vitamin B12 and cognition, you know, sometimes it can mirror dementia if you're low on it. So if you're vegan and you're not getting, you know, enough B12 in it, don't ignore it. Make sure you check your levels to make sure you're okay. You can have symptoms of memory loss, behavioral changes, increased agitation, believe it or not, with it. Now, this is the exciting news, okay? So, Ozempic and Wegovy enter trials for treating addiction and dementia, and it was just released on September 7th. So, these drugs have the GLP-1 in it, and it's for weight loss and also to treat type 2 diabetes or diabetes. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens with it. I can tell you this, I've had a number of patients on this, and it's wonderful. We take down the weight, the visceral fat, you know, taking down cholesterol levels, A1C levels. You know, forget about some of the stuff you're hearing out there. I'm hearing some ridiculous things. It's actually a great drug. I've gone to two conferences lately. One was a peptide conference, another one, a hormone conference. They're both thinking that this thing really might be doing some good for dementia, cardiovascular disease, and all of that. Yeah, you might get a sunken face. Well, I can tell you what goes on with that is that it's helping, you know, take down visceral fat or fat. We get fat in our face, you know. So if you are kind of heavy, you're going to have more fat in your face. In real life, what happens as we grow older, the fat kind of slides down our face eventually. So you can get that look. You know, what you can do is just put a little bit of filler in there and you'll look good, you know. And, but I really think the drug works, you know, it works on regulating, insulin and sugar. And really it keeps going to the point where we're thinking, you know, you're hearing, you know, it's probably a lot of this is due to insulin resistance. So we got to fight that insulin resistance. The drug itself, it kind of decreases hunger, but you can have some side effects as nausea, vomiting, constipation, but you know, they can be treated with anti-nausea drugs. There are some other things that can happen, but on the whole, you know, most people do really, really well with it. And there are a few different studies out there showing that this is going, you know, hopefully going to help this. Now let's look at an area that there isn't a lot of money. Okay. And that is hormones. And there are studies out there for years and years pointing to the fact that estradiol can help reduce the plaque or to protect you from, you know, dementia and cardiovascular disease. And this is one of them. In 2009, an article called Protective Actions of Sex Steroid Hormones in Alzheimer's Disease. And what they're finding is, you know, when women go into menopause, there's not any estrogen left to protect, right? So as they go into menopause, something else needs to occur. And so, If a patient is able to start estradiol the moment you get into menopause or 1 year after not having a period, there's actually studies that show it protects you for a very long time. However, there is a time, it's a 10-year window, that's very important to get started at that point. They're also showing that testosterone increases neural resistance to the insult of Alzheimer's disease. It also reduces neural cell apoptosis, preserving the lifespan of neurons, as well as the reduction of beta amyloid production and accumulation. Now, I found another study out there, and this is kind of cool. It's called Changes in Spatial Cognition and Brain Activity in Healthy Women After Just a Single Dose of Testosterone. And what they did, they used it, inhaled it, so it was done nasally. Just one time, it increased their MRT, or mental rotation task score, more than what occurred with the placebo group. And then there's another group in 2011, and it was a 26-week study that they also used a testosterone spray, and it also showed improvement of verbal learning and memory scores. This is just a simple testosterone nasal, and it's showing to really help. I mean, kind of cool, huh? And then there's other studies that have been showing MRIs of the brains of the women who have taken estrogen supplements throughout menopause had a larger hippocampus, which is so important. This is the important structure for memory and sense of place. And the hippocampus is one of the structures affected early in the progression of Alzheimer's disease. In women who start, like I was saying, estrogen supplements several years after menopause, I really don't show that much of a benefit in the hippocampus. So the age of estrogen therapy is paramount. If estrogen therapy is started at menopause and used for more than 10 years, get this, there's a reduction up to 83% in the lifetime risk of Alzheimer's disease. Now, there was a study, too, just recently out of University of Arizona, and it was in collaboration with the Weill Cornell Medicine researchers. At any rate, they found the greater exposure in life to estrogen, for example, from having had one or more children, or hormone therapy may counteract this brain shrinking effect that occurs with the loss of estrogen. The findings reported November 3 in Neurology come from an analysis of personal histories, MRI scans, and cognitive tests on 99 women in their late 40s and 50s. And what they wanted to know, then they confirmed, is that researchers confirmed earlier finding linking menopause to low gray matter volume in brain areas that are also vulnerable to Alzheimer's. This study was observational rather than a clinic trial, but it does add to the evidence that estrogen may have a protective effect on the female brain, limiting the loss of gray matter that normally comes with menopause, thereby potentially reducing the risk of Alzheimer's. And estrogen levels, as we say, you know, are talking about, they decline steeply during transition through menopause, and women tend to experience more gray matter loss during this time. So it's important to build that up, not let it go south, I guess you can say. It confirmed that postmenopausal and perimenopausal starting menopause women compared with premenopausal women had significantly lower gray matter volume in brain areas such as the hippocampus and other areas that are heavily affected by Alzheimer's. By contrast, among the women that had more estrogen exposure, as implied by various factor, was associated with greater gray matter factor in certain brain areas. So the result really just does support the fact that estradiol is protective of the brain. Now, there's another study out there called the Cache County Study, and that was done in Utah, and it was called Hormone Replacement Therapy and Incidences of Alzheimer's Diseases in Older Women. What they did is they looked at older women in the late 80s, looked if they were on HRT, and then also, I believe, multivitamin and calcium, and they wanted to know, is there an effect if a person or if a woman was on HRT, you know, were they, you know, more at risk or not? And what they found is, after follow-up, the women that had been on HRT or estrogen did fine. did fine. However, if they were not, they had increased risk of Alzheimer's disease. And the risk varied with the duration of HRT, so that if a woman's sex-specific increase in risk disappeared, what they found out, entirely within 10 years. So it went away in 10 years. So if they were on hormones for 10 years, they found that their risk disappeared totally. However, they found out that calcium and multivitamins did nothing. It just didn't do anything. Now, there's a study that actually was released on CNN this last week. And if you had read it, you might get a little confused with it, or maybe not if you don't know the history. Anyway, the paper was, or it was called, the article was called HRT Used by Younger Women Linked to Dementia. Women in their 50s who took estrogen and progestin had an increased risk of dementia within 20 years. There were 56,000 Danish women, and this was between the years of 2002-2018 that they were studied. Over 5,500 of those women were later diagnosed with dementia. So what went on here? What went on here is they were on a progestin, and a progestin, medroxyprogesterone is out there. And in the studies 23 years ago with the WHI, that medroxyprogestin just was not good. It caused a lot of issues. And now we're seeing later on down the line that, yes, it's causing dementia. And I'm also going to tell you, ladies, that if you are on birth control, there is progestins in a lot of those birth controls. One of them is norethindrone, and it is stronger than medroxyprogesterone. So, you know, increase possibly of breast cancer, increase possibly of dementia. So something to know, be aware of. It's up to you to what you do with all of that. Anyway, I want to look at diet. You know, diet is so incredibly important. Don't you agree? I mean, research has been finding that consuming an anti-inflammatory diet, such as rich in fruits and nuts and seeds and vegetables, it's really good for us. And it can decrease the risk of, you know, inflammation, type 2 diabetes, and dementia. And it's also good, really, to take a look at limiting oils, you know, because they're high in omega-6s. I don't care if it's an olive oil or an avocado oil. It's still the same. It's, you know, the original source is best. They're finding that tea and coffee may protect the brain and reduce dementia. Less inflammation in the body, less means less inflammation in the brain and better cognitive health, right? Now, have you heard of the Mediterranean diet? It is a diet that is just that. It's rich in fruits and vegetables and lean protein. You know, otherwise what we all know is the Western diet, which contains an excess of red meat or saturated fats and refined sugars, right? That's what a lot of us do in the U.S. And what it is found, or what's been found, is that the Mediterranean diet may slow the development of Alzheimer's disease. Researchers estimate that there may be as a 3.5-year delay in the progression of Alzheimer's in people who have eaten a Mediterranean diet for many, many years rather than a Western standard diet. Crazy. There's also a study out there by Dr. Mascani, and what she did, or what they did, is they measured changes in the brain over time. They wanted to see what was going on between the two diets, like Mediterranean diet or Western diet. And so what they did is they performed baseline brain imaging in 34 people who ate a Mediterranean diet and 36 people who ate a Western diet. Not huge, but, you know, the volunteers ranged in the ages from 30 to 60 and showed no signs of dementia. The brain scans taken at the beginning showed that the people who ate a Western standard diet had already more beta amyloid deposits than those who ate a Mediterranean diet. And the brains of those who ate a Western diet also showed lower energy use at the beginning of the study than those who ate a Mediterranean diet. Both of these differences suggest the early development of dementia. 2 years later, they re-scanned them, and they found out, guess what? People in the Western diet group showed even greater beta amyloid deposits and reductions in energy use than the Mediterranean diet group. So there is something with diet, right? And Dr. Mascani stated they were seeing these changes in only parts of the brain specifically affected by the Alzheimer's in relatively young adults. So her point at the very end of it was, it all points to the way we are eating, puts us at risk for getting Alzheimer's down the line. If your diet isn't balanced, you really need to make an effort to fix it. If not for your body, then for your brain. You know, I have to really think about it. You know, I worked in the cath labs and, you know, I'd see all these people coming in the door, you know, with heart issues, clogged up arteries. And there's just no way that I can think a high protein diet is okay. I mean, everybody has their choices, but when you see those arteries and people are telling you what they're eating, and then when they come in and I see high HDLs, no, low HDLs, which means, by the way, possibly diabetes, high LDLs and high apolipoprotein Bs, really thinking that more fruits and vegetables, you know, they will help haul out the toxins, and nothing wrong with, you know, having lean meat and all that kind of thing. But if you want your brain to be healthy, you have to think about like, what am I putting in and that kind of thing. And I will tell you, I never knew this, but there is as much fat in chicken as almost red meat. I never knew that, but that is really true. So let's look at the evidence here. Studies that observed changes in people who ate the Mediterranean diet, for example. In one observational study, 116 cognitively normal adults who followed a Mediterranean diet had thicker cortical brain regions than those who did not. And these brain regions shrink in people with Alzheimer's. So having thicker regions in the brain could mean it could give a cognitive benefit for you. Also, follow-up observational studies show lower glucose metabolism and higher levels of beta amyloid protein, both seen in Alzheimer's, in people who did not follow the Mediterranean diet closely compared to those who did. Then analysis of diet and other factors found that an average of 4.5 years, people who had adhered more closely to the MIND diet or Mediterranean diet had a 53% reduced rate of Alzheimer's disease compared to those who did not follow the diet closely. In a similar study following the MIND diet, it was associated with a substantial slowing of cognitive decline during an average of almost 5 years. And then it even goes, there was an eye study and they were looking at diet and eye disease using the Mediterranean diet. And they found a lower risk of developing cognitive problems while maintaining a higher level of cognitive function. So, you know, it is kind of pointing that all this is kind of important. So tying this up, I hope you learned something today with lifestyle, you know, with supplements, with hormones can be really good. And the sooner, you know, you go on them, the better. And yes, men do make estradiol and it can protect them also from dementia or Alzheimer's. So at that note, I'm just going to say thank you so much for listening to me this week. In no way here should you take this as medical advice. This information here is only of my opinion and thoughts and possibly entertainment for you. It is not meant to prescribe medical advice. If you have questions for treatment, please address it with your provider. On that note, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you can receive new episodes. And you can do that on the app that you're using, or you can even go to my website, rejuvenatemyhormones.com. We do have an office here in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I also do talk to people virtually about diet throughout the country. I do have licenses in various states. I look at preventive disease like cardiovascular, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and all that kind of thing to try to help people, as well as weight loss in the clinic and hormones. Lastly, I do have a quick favor to ask before we go. If you've enjoyed this podcast, I hope that you will let me know. I would really like to read through your reviews in Apple and Spotify. And if you have a minute to spare, let Apple know that great listeners like you enjoy our show and Spotify. This will help expand our reach. And please, please, please include any topics that you would like covered in future episodes. I'd love to do that. And look for us next week. Thank you so, so much. And cheers to a week of rejuvenating your hormones and health.